The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President, Government Strategy and Policy, U.S. Government Business Unit at Inmarsat. Whew, that's a lot of words, huh? Rebecca, how are you today?
I'm doing well, John. Good morning.
Good, good, good. I try to cover all kinds of topics on this show. It's a Federal Tech Talk, and your interview number 423, I think. And, you know, what unifying factor for just about every show I have is some way to communicate with other people. And normally it's gotten to a satellite. I mean, you pick up a phone, that's a satellite. You email someone, there's probably a satellite involved. You go home and you watch sports, there's probably a satellite involved. And so understanding satellite and satellite technology, I think, is important for all of my listeners, especially the federal IT professionals who listen to the show. So that's what we have in the studio today, Rebecca. Before we begin, tell us a little about your background and how you wound up working for Inmarsat, please.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. You know, it's your comment about dependence on satellites. Most of us don't even really appreciate how often we are reliant on satellites. And satellites have really been my business now for more decades than I care to admit. I spent a little over 20 years in the Department of Defense with a large focus on communication, electronics equipment, aviation, and of course, satellites. I'm an engineer by training. I've been trying to overcome that for many, many years now and went down a management track at some point in time in my career. But I kept coming back to this wonderful business of satellites and, in particular, satellite communications.
And when, so you have good academic qualifications. You have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. That's
right.
The hard one. What do you study? Systems engineering. Okay. EEO, that's the hard one. That's what they all say. So it's a tough and a good solid background then.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the backdrop of the Department of Defense experience, you know, Inmarsat has been supporting governments since its inception and was interested in bringing some new and different perspective into the company. And so in 2008, I was invited to join the company and help them evaluate and grow their government business and, in fact, shape their future networks to be able to support this, you know, critical communication dependency on satellites from the government.
You know, when I talk with software developers, and many of them have very focused specialties, and they're very, very well-versed in a very specific area. For example, integrating Amazon Redshift with Salesforce. And so they can talk that topic real well. And there's some people that know general topics, and people may not know much about this company, Inmarsat. Maybe you can tell us about the history of the company. Been around for a few decades. Pretty big organization. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of the company, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Inmarsat's been around for over 35 years. And we actually started first and foremost as a maritime safety and distress organization under the International Maritime Organization. And the purpose really at origin was to create highly reliable safety services over ocean waters where there was no coverage of any other type of communication capability. So Inmarsat was established to provide this highly reliable, highly dependable global coverage satellite communication to provide this core safety service in the event of a disaster at sea. It's from that basis that we have evolved and continued to invest in our constellation and our ground network to continue to provide that critical communication on, you know, all over the world, over land, over sea, and in the air. So we've evolved from a company that was purely safety services to a rich set of communication services, voice, video, data. We've been flying what we call narrowband or L-band satellites since that inception, and now are deploying a global constellation of wideband or Ka satellites to complement that capability. So the organization has grown. In fact, when I joined the company, it was just under 500 people. And since that time, we've grown both in reach as well as in personnel and capabilities, and we're about 1,800 people now on a global basis. Maritime remains our largest customer base, but the government is our second largest vertical unit. And if you look at the U.S. government as an entity itself, that is our single largest customer. So we continue to invest in and look at opportunities to provide unique capabilities to support these critical communications by satellite on a global basis.
When I first heard of the company, I thought it was some kind of a Swedish name. It sounds Swedish or Norwegian or something like that. It's actually just a portmanteau of International Maritime Satellite, which brings the whole satellite thing there.
That's exactly
Marsat.
Right.
Yeah, so that makes sense to me. And now the listeners can have a better idea. Oh, so that's what it is. It's an international, it started with, so non-terrestrial. Now I get
that's
it.
Right.
And so, and what you find out is that you've made a big impact in saving lives with disaster recovery. I mean, you see, that's where you've made a big impact as well, besides serving the government. But all kinds of disaster recovery people use your services, don't they?
You know, it's absolutely right. And that's one of the things that I find so fascinating about working for the company. It's the ethos that undergirds the business that we do. And that ethos allows us to really focus on humanitarian relief, disaster support, emergency response, and provides those essential communications when there's no other communication capability available to ensure that you can get, you know, those emergency responders, those, you know, units in immediately to provide care and support, restore the communication system so that you can actually get that community back up and running immediately, or provide a safety response in the event of a disaster at sea. And of course, aviation. Any aircraft that travels over oceanic water carries our system on board. And that's important to be able to know that in the event that you have a very unexpected, unusual circumstance, Inmarsat's there to provide critical reach back capability and safety services. And that's core to who we are.
And let's pull back the curtains here. You know, when that Malaysia Airlines got lost, guess who jumped in?
Well, you know, it was, you know, such an unfortunate situation, but Inmarsat services were there and able, you know, with the strength of the engineering group and the operations unit, provide as much information that we had available to be able to support the investigation and help to provide insight into where to look and ideally, ultimately, to provide closure to the families that had that disaster.
And if you're listening to this interview and there's snow on the ground or something, and I say the word Inmarsat, and you don't really understand, now you get what it does. I mean, it has a lot of intelligence information, they know exactly what satellites, and they can assist in many different organizations in all kinds of different ways. And one way, obviously, is with these disasters. And there seems to, every time we turn around, there's some kind of an airline disaster or something, and they need specialized services that you can provide. Let's talk about your federal government services and how you can help my listeners, my little govies. I have a lot of project managers that listen, but I have all kinds of different people who, all kinds of ranges of the government that are interested in learning out more about satellite services. So tell us more about where satellite services plays with my listeners.
Absolutely. Well, let's just take a specific example, picking up from disaster response. So Federal Emergency Management Association Agency, FEMA. You know, in the event that you've got, this is hurricane season. If a hurricane comes and takes out unfortunate areas and FEMA has a response, they have immediate access to Inmarsat wherever they respond to be able to have instant communication, just plug and play. It's just as simple as that, to be able to reach back and communicate when nothing else is available. You ramp up the scale from that humanitarian relief disaster response all the way up to critical military communications, whether it's command and control or the more data-rich video services for airborne intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. So we support the full spectrum of operations from humanitarian relief all the way through to these most essential military and defense and intelligence operations.
One of my sons in high school, he played lacrosse. And his buddies would come over, and I would try to feed them. And I'd bring pizzas, and I'd find, you know, the two for Tuesday pizzas, and it was never enough. I couldn't, you could just drive up to the Costco and just feed them. They would not stop eating. They had an insatiable demand for food, and I think there is an insatiable demand in the world today for satellite services too, isn't there? I mean, I don't know if you can gauge it or not.
Well, much like we in our own individual lives are increasingly dependent on our cell phones, our iPads, our mobile devices for navigation. That's how I got here today. to any other thing, you know, our own personal demands are also replicated across government. So the government, whether it's military or any of the federal agencies, also are dependent upon these increasing data hungry devices. And there's no appetite suppression on these applications in terms of the bandwidth that they demand. And so we continue to increase the amount of throughput that's available via satellite to be able to support those data-rich applications, you know, here at home, abroad, overseas, anywhere in the world that you may go, because that demand continues to grow. And the dependence on instant access to information, instant plug into the network is essential. And satellites enable that. And when you have it mobile, then certainly that's where Inmarsat comes in play. That's our specialty, is the mobility access to that critical network.
Let's take a break and come back, talk more about maybe some applications in the DoD and how your services have helped the folks over on that side of the river. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President of Government Strategy and Policy, U.S. Government Business Unit at Inmarsat. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This morning, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch. She works for Inmarsat. That stands for satellites. If you'd like to have more information, you can have to spell this out on radio, Rebecca. It's INMARSAT.com/, and then click on the government tab and go to the government or U.S. government services. So it's INMARSAT, Inmarsat. That's the radio in me. I have to say that because people, well, what's that word? Two M's, three M's, two N's. It's kind of tough. Yeah. Before the break, we kind of made a slow transition into your background, then talked about the company, then talked about my listeners. Let's talk about my listeners over at, in the Pentagon, the DoD there. So over at the Pentagon, they use a lot of different catchphrases and terms that I normally don't use. But my son has friends who are Army Rangers. And these guys throw these terms about all the time. And one is comms on the move. So what does that comms on the move mean to a ranger? Tell us about that word.
Yeah, so communications on the move, or COTM, which is the acronym because government have their own very unique speak. Comms on the move really is just being able to take your radio, and that's a genericized term, anywhere you intend to go. So for a ranger, it could be in a rucksack. I could be, you know, dropped in off of a helicopter and be able to be in the most austere environment, operating solo or with a small unit. The key word here really is on the move, not able to plug into a network, no access to cellular, in some cases, not even access to line of sight. And so that's where satellite communication comes in, and that's where our capabilities are critical to these, you know, disconnected users that can't plug in, so that they can actually pull out their satellite radio and be able to have access to voice, video, and data right there, whether they're operating alone or in a unit. But the key item really is that they're mobile, highly mobile. It doesn't have to be a foot soldier or someone individual. It can actually be on a platform such as a Humvee or any other type of vehicle that is moving as part of the unit. But really the focus is just being able to have the same degree of connectivity, connection to the satellite communication unit and all the applications while on the move that you would if you were operating in an office or in a operating base in a fixed location.
And I'll state the obvious from what I've heard from my son's friends is these guys don't get dropped into Paris or Ocean City. They get dropped in the middle of nowhere at night. There's nothing. And they're expected to do crazy things and come back in the morning and it's dark and they have to, and this assists them in saving lives. So I know it's important because I've heard some stories that, I don't know if I believe these stories, but jumping on helicopters at night, not something that I really want to do, but I know the guys do it. It's just, I can't.
It is a special service, no question.
So this comes under the general acronym of AISR, is that right?
Well, when you bring in the airborne intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, that takes mobility to a completely different level. So now rather than soldiers or Humvees or even ships, you're now taking your capabilities airborne. They can be manned or unmanned. And the criticality here is being able to surveil the particular area. And that could be anything from evaluating what your battle damage awareness may be to intelligence collection to search and rescue. Any type of surveillance, and then being able to transfer that information back to the forward operating location or the home base to be able to analyze the data, the video collected, and the information during that process. Obviously, when you're airborne, there's no ability to plug into a fixed terrestrial network. And so, again, we've got a highly mobile device, a highly mobile aircraft of some variety that requires access to satellite communications to be able to transfer that information from the surveillance reconnaissance back into a fixed unit. And that's where we provide those highly rich data applications to be able to support those critical communications.
I wish we had a whiteboard. I deal with software engineers and physics majors all day long. And if we had a whiteboard here, you could probably visually show me how complex this is. Okay, this is one level of complexity. Okay, now the next level of complexity, we get two things that are moving. And the third level of complexity is the encryption. And it all has to work instantly and accurately. And it's just in very remote areas. So it gets very, very complex. So this has got to have an impact on the first responder community as well, doesn't it?
Certainly it does. And, you know, since the first responder units are not constantly using satellite communications, what is important is that ease of use so that when they actually have to respond to whatever situation calls their services, they can readily and easily operate the capability. And so within MARSATs, whether it's a, you know, broadband global area network, a BGAN terminal or a satellite phone or other type of terminal, the ease of operation is so essential for those people that pick them up and go wherever they need to go. And when they arrive to do their mission, there's easy setup, easy access, and consistent, reliable access, because it's important that that information.
Well, it's got to be. It could be at night on a mountain in a rainstorm.
Absolutely. Very adverse conditions. No question about it.
These stories. I know some stories. I can imagine it. Have you ever been to that museum off Route 28 called Utvar Haze?
That's a wonderful place.
So I called them up last week and I said, hey, want to go in there and record a podcast from their floor there? And they said, no way, Jose. They wouldn't let me do it. But when I was there with my kids years ago, they had satellites floating around. They have all kinds of different airplanes there. Mm-hmm. And I got to think that boy, that technology has changed. And I think there's all kinds of new changes in that area. And I think that's what you should inform our listeners of is, look, you know, that's your father's satellite. And there's all kinds of new things going on. In fact, you're at the bleeding edge of some new technology here, aren't you?
Certainly so. And satellites have changed a lot since the very first Sputnik that went up and the advent of satellite communication. And it's everything from the globality that we offer. So we have a small number of satellites spaced around the Earth in geostationary orbit. So that means essentially wherever you are on the Earth, the satellite above you does not move. So it rotates with the Earth. And you actually have the ability with that technology and the global operation of our satellites, in this case, to be able to take off in Washington, D.C. and have solid connectivity and communication anywhere around the globe, wherever you may fly. So that interconnection, the higher throughputs that are available on today's satellites, very, very advanced technologies. Also, when you look at what we put in the waveforms themselves, so this is the way you actually communicate from the ground to the satellite, gives you a robust security that your information that you're putting across that satellite link is going to get from point A to point B as you expect it to without interference or without any type of cyber issues or any other type of concern. Because it's important whether you're in banking or whether you're in military operations or whether you're conveying information on the people that are on the aircraft for United Airlines. That information needs to be protected, and so we work very hard to ensure that we protect that capability.
I thought you were going to say, from banking to bank off.
Oh, I'm not that clever.
So I have a friend who was invited to speak in China, and he flew over there. He's 6'4", mm-hmm. and when he came back, he had an extra large seat or something he ordered. And he said, oh, by the way, this plane had power from my laptop and Wi-Fi. So it was great. He worked all the way back.
You know, aviation communication is our fastest growing.
He didn't blink an eye, mm-hmm. but I'm sure you'd jump up and down your chair and go, hey, buddy, what do you think MARSAT was behind all? It took 30 years for us to figure that out. I mean, people like you beating their head against the wall with whiteboards. I mean, it seems pretty easy, but this is not an easy thing to do, have a satellite. Because satellite's moving, the plane's moving, and there's constant communication, but it's hard.
Well, and we try to make it as simple as possible for the user itself and take the complexity, whether it's, you know, the satellite communications aspect or even the network operations, so that's completely transparent. You know, when you're a user, whether it's in an aircraft as a consumer and you have your Wi-Fi access, or in government operations, you really don't want to be concerned about what's happening behind that wall. You simply want to be assured that the communication via satellite is going to happen. So we take that complexity and manage it ourselves so that the user just enjoys that rich experience. So they have that high quality level of service, a committed information rate, so their data rates are what they expect them to be. So they don't have to worry about the complexities and the engineering techniques behind the system.
We just talked about the DoD, and I intentionally brought in a commercial application to contrast it. And I think it's a good way to make the transition to the next block. Let's take a little break, come back. We'll talk more about Global Express and some of the technology that you folks are using, and maybe talk about the new satellite that's about to launch in just a few days. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch. She is in the U.S. Government Business Unit of a company called Inmarsat. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Got a satellite show today. Yeah, we do. We have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch. She's a Senior Vice President, Government Strategy and Policy, U.S. Government Business Unit at Inmarsat. Now, I'm not a very smart guy. This is kind of a confusing word for me, so I'm going to spell it out for my listeners so you know exactly the company we're talking about. I-N as in Nancy, I-N-M-A-R, like Marine, I-N-M-A-R, Sat, like satellite, Inmarsat. And if you want more information on them, they have tons of stuff there. You can go to I-N-M-A-R-S-A-T.com and click on that government button. I was there this morning. You'll find out that They're everywhere. Well, they need to be everywhere. They're everywhere overhead. They're in many different areas. And they have all kinds of new information. What is new about the company, really, is this thing called Global Express. Competitor to Federal Express? What is Global Express anyway?
Yeah, so Global Express is our next generation of satellites to add to our constellation. As we said earlier, we've been flying satellites for over 35 years. And up until Global Express, all of our satellites have been operating in L-band. Narrowband frequencies that's highly, highly available, highly reliable, anytime, any place, all weather conditions. Data rates on those satellites are relatively limited by physics. We have great engineers, but we haven't mastered how to overcome physics. So we've developed Global Express, which is a satellite constellation of three satellites as a baseline, all operating in Ka spectrum. So this is a much higher data rate, much higher frequency that allows for increased data-rich applications to be able to leverage access. Our first satellite for Global Express went up and is operational as of July of last year, 2014. The second satellite has reached its location and is doing some testing right now. That's located over the Atlantic Ocean region. And our third satellite, which will complete the global constellation, is scheduled to launch on the 28th of August.
Right, end of the month.
Yeah, very exciting. So this Global Express constellation is unprecedented in that it is the first ever global constellation that operates in K-band for mobility operations. Seamless, anytime, any place, anywhere. And it's brought to you by Inmarsat, which has been providing this type of critical communications for 35 years. And so now we've added, in addition to L-band, this higher throughput, wideband satellite communication capabilities to support our users. We've added some added some attributes into Global Express that are specifically designed for government. Any of those design elements for the government benefit our commercial customers as well. But the U.S. government is our single largest customer. So we're quite keen to ensure that their critical communications are supported reliably and consistently across the globe.
I have a daughter who's living in Seattle, and Seattle is home of a lot of indie bands. And so she's talking about these names. The names are like the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my whole life. And so I was doing prep for this interview, and I'm talking about the KA band and the KU band. I was going to call my daughter and say, hey, Brittany, what are all these band names? But maybe you can differentiate that for our audience. What is this KA band, the KU band, the L band? Maybe a little nutshell description.
Yeah, so it really is frequencies. Much like your radio frequencies, or and your call here is at 1500 AM. That's one frequency. When you go L-band, that's higher than your radio frequency, but it is limited by data rates. So our data rates are anywhere from half a megabit throughput to, you know, higher data rates based on the different applications. K-band is higher up in the frequency, so you actually begin to get narrower spot beams and can allow for higher throughput. What does that mean for our users? That really means that you can put more data-rich applications, video streaming, more pictures and different things that
insatiable demand.
Insatiable demand for at your data rates. As your data rates increase, you need to go up into the frequency band, and you get some enhanced capability in those wideband. So what we've done by adding the wideband of KA right along L-band is we've added the high throughput alongside of the high availability to be able to have the most redundant and most resilient satellite network in the on a global basis.
I have a friend named David Linthicum, and he's written 13 books, and the last book was probably 5 years ago. I was promoting it at my breakfast club once, and it was software as a service. And little did I know that this catchphrase, as a service, would be appended to everything. Everything's as a service. And I guess even it can be used with the phrase satellite. So there's something, a concept now called satellite acquisition model for the modern age. It's SATCOM as a service. Is that being appended in this area too?
Without a doubt. So SATCOM as a service really brings together the communication link between the ground segment and the satellite, but more importantly, the user terminals. So taking the complexity out of the user's hand, SATCOM as a service really allows the user to just focus on what it is they need to do, not how that it's done. So SATCOM as a service manages all of the complexities of the network, make sure that the satellite and the ground network are sound, that the terminal that consumes the radio, if you will, that consumes the information from the satellite, that that's all embedded, and it's just a service that's provided, managed to you with a committed information rate, a high quality of service, a guaranteed service level agreement. This really allows the user to focus on the what, not the how, so that the user can accomplish his mission without worrying about the quality of the service. It will be there. It's guaranteed to be there. So SATCOM as a service really rolls all of the different complex elements of network management, satellite operations, terminal development and deployment into a service that's offered to our customers on a global basis. It allows them to plug in anytime, any place, anywhere under the coverage of our constellation without being concerned about the satellite capability. It will be there.
So that's what Global Express ties in with this service, is that right?
Absolutely. Global Express provides that with a very high throughput and the flexibility of that operation, the seamless operation, and it's really targeted for mobility. So those users that are on the move at sea, in the air, on land, they can have guaranteed access, assured access with a quality of service anywhere they tend to operate using the same terminal here in the U.S. or anywhere over the world that they intend to go.
I was working with a company yesterday, a $200 million company with a bunch of 20 salespeople, and the CEO walked in the room and he left the room and I said, well, that was a disrupting influence, wasn't it? Well, yes, it's his job to disrupt. And I think this technology could be, you could throw that word in there too. It's changing the way people look at satellite services.
Absolutely. It really is very similar to what we enjoy in our consumer lives on our cell phones. You know, we don't worry about whether the cell tower is where it's supposed to be or whether you can actually connect. We just turn our phone on and make that phone call or download that application. Global Express allows that at higher data rates anywhere that user tends to be. They don't have to worry about that. So it is very innovative and unprecedented to be able to provide that rich throughput, that highly connected capability anywhere. So you could, you know, use the same terminal here in the U.S., over in Europe. You could then take it into Asia and anywhere overseas, anywhere that you tend to be and guaranteed be able to have access to the capability. It is unprecedented. It's unique. It's also game-changing in that the capabilities that we provide really are designed in part to complement the rich military satellite communication capabilities that are available today to be able to support those users in an augmented, highly reliable, complementary fashion to extend the network and provide that integrated satellite communications picture that's so critical for military operations.
So if you're listening to this interview on iTunes, or if you're listening to this interview streaming when there's snow on the ground, you may want to type in these words in Google. It's called the I-5F3 satellite. Now, I sound like an engineer here, but that's what it's called, isn't it?
That's the satellite that goes up on the 28th of August, completing the global constellation. Absolutely.
So you can go to Wikipedia and learn about the company, learn about different satellites. In fact, Wikipedia has a great listing of all the satellites you have and the dates and the times. It's a nice snapshot of your company. Have you read that article on Wikipedia? It's great.
We're on constantly updating the information.
Really?
To ensure
it looks
that
like it too.
That it provides the most relevant and accurate information. That alongside with our website, you know, there's a lot of information. It's important to us that people get the truth on what the company is doing.
And my listeners, when they hear about this, they're probably going to go to Google, type, maybe look at the Wikipedia entry, maybe go to website. And then if they see it at a trade conference, then they go, oh, these three or four touch points, maybe I'll walk over and say hello to Rebecca. And so it's a funny little relationship that listeners have with companies. And we're trying to let them know of a lot of different ones out there, providing a lot of different services. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about satellites and maybe talk about MilSatCom and how your services can impact my listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch. She's Government Services Business Unit at Inmarsat.
Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, learn how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 9, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help breathe life into federal IT policy. And at 11, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO to hear from your agency's top tech leader how technology is changing government. Tech Tuesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Talking satellites today. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch. She's the Senior Vice President, Government Strategy and Policy, U.S. Government Business Unit at Inmarsat, Inmarsat. We've been talking about satellite services and commercial use and government use and military use and everything else. If you want to follow the company on Twitter, it's pretty easy. I think it's, is it at Inmarsat? Gov, is that what it is?
At Inmarsat Global.
At Inmarsat Global. And if you want to follow me, I have a silly handle. It's at Ray Gilray. So you can have all my little funny things I was tweeting out this morning. A lot of people like social information. They like to follow things socially and see what's going on. And, you know, it's interesting that I always get people in the studio and people corner me outside and they go, oh, really, what was Sally Smith? Now, what kind of phone did she use or what did she have? And so I've come up with a scientific 10-question test that an engineer would approve of that was going to find out exactly if you are a card-carrying nerd or if you're normal. So we'll find out and we'll answer these questions. First question. Do you have an Instagram account?
Yes.
Ooh, that's good. How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
None.
Should be like one every 2 months if you're a real nerd. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Yes.
Okay. And have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
No.
Oh, that's your spotty here.
Not even sure I know what they are, candidly.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone.
Mm-hmm. And what's the most popular app on that phone in the last 30 days?
Waze and Cityscape.
Cityscape. Mm-hmm. Huh? That's good, good, good. We break into your house. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
Six.
That's a lot of nerd points. That's pretty strong. And when was your most recent post in social networking?
This morning.
Oh, now you're really getting a lot of points here. You're coming on strong. And when is your Apple Watch due? Did you order one?
Not yet. Waiting for the next generation.
Oh, so you're smart. Yeah, the bleeding edge is bad for you. Go for the next model.
Let someone else work out the bugs. Absolutely.
Good, good, good. And Rebecca, the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Paper.
Paper. That's a mixed bag, you know? You're strong in many categories. I'll have to put it through my UNIVAC computer and find out exactly what you rate for in the nerdomity scale there.
I do like to unplug.
Yeah, that's good. I like both electronic and paper, but it's interesting to find out how people get information and what they do with that information as well. We have to get back to something serious here and talk about MilSatCom and acquisition, and there's been some changes over the years in that. Do you have any comments in that general area, Rebecca?
Oh, certainly. So the military's been dependent on satellite communications really since its inception, and even more so over the last, I'll call it generation. It used to be that it was purely military satellite communications. However, over the last 20 years, that has shifted, and there's a increased dependency on commercial satellite communications. So one of the things that we see going forward is certainly informed by the budgetary environment, but more informed by the technology and robust communication capability provided by the commercial satellite industry, that integrating those two MilSatCom and commercial SATCOM capabilities intentionally to provide that rich network of communications is critical to enable the full spectrum of operations, disaster response all the way to full-scale military operations.
Last week, Dr. Tom Salucci sat in here, and he wrote a book on public-private partnerships. This is his 24th book. And that's exactly what you said. I mean, you're putting in work boots what he talked about last week.
That's right. And we see an even increased opportunity to enhance that private support to the public sector so that you actually have that rich exchange and that partnership, which is quite key going forward.
My son and I went to see that Mission Impossible movie last weekend, and it was a lot of fun. And, you talk about security and everything else. I got to ask about security and satellites and issues and challenges. I know that's being addressed, but I have to bring up the topic here. I have to ask everyone about security.
Well, and it's a fair question, because nothing is more important than the security of any network, whether it's terrestrial, cellular, and even satellite. Satellites really are just another node on the network, and being able to ensure that satellite communication network is secure is fundamental to our business. We put a lot of focus and attention and investment into ensuring the security of our network. We have dedicated cyber directorate to ensure that our network is secure and sound and that we can protect our assets. That allows any user to rest comfortably knowing that their information that flows across our network is protected and that the network is sound. It's core to who we are. It's something that we place a high degree of attention on, just like any other network operation.
Now, software as a service could be viewed as a response to budget constraints. I would imagine that satellite as a service could be response to budget constraints. And we got to bring this up, too. There are budget constraints with all agencies now, and they have to do more with less. And maybe they have to learn to optimize their satellite services better than they're doing now.
That's exactly right. And so when you look at SATCOM as a service, it takes not only the complexity, but some of the investment dollars out of the government's responsibility and allows them to enjoy a rich, enhanced service at a more affordable rate. They can use it when and where they require it. And, count on us to continue to invest in our network. You know, we are putting somewhere on the order of $400 to $500 million on an annual basis invested into the strength and the technology advancements of our network. That is then made available as a service to our users. And when you provide it as SATCOM as a service, our investment benefits not only government users, but all of our commercial users. And it's something that allows affordable, reliable communication in a budget-constrained environment for the government, but also, importantly, the reliability of that network to support their critical communications.
This, of course, is Federal News Radio, and if you come to our website, you get bombarded with all kinds of information, many, many different articles and interviews about an important word called sequestration. Mm. And I normally don't hit the obvious, let's talk about how hot it is in August. I don't normally bring this up, but this has to have an impact on satellite service as well, doesn't it?
Well, sequestration has had a result on how the government does business. And so there are some unintended consequences of a result of this Budget Control Act. So you have some contracting choices that are made on lease price, technically acceptable, versus evaluating the value of a service. This is important when you start talking about something that is life-saving, that is critical to fundamental operations, whether it's military or federal emergency response. That's really not a cost driver, though you want it to be affordable. You need to make decisions that are based on the critical security the critical availability, those other attributes that are important, and that is a value determination. So you can actually have unintended consequences as a result of sequestration.
I was in Oklahoma last summer, and I'm always amazed at the politicians that come out of there. They're real earthy and they're real authentic. I mean, there's no BS with those folks from Oklahoma. And there's a congressman, he talked about warfighters. He said, what we need to do is to figure out the architecture to give the warfighter what they need. Bang, that's it. That's the sentence. So that's your job, Rebecca, isn't it? I mean, your job is to implement what he wants, isn't it?
That's right. And that is our role, really, to ensure that the communication requirements, what that warfighter, what that federal government user needs, we have it available so that they can focus on their mission. We'll take care of the satellite communication networks. They need to focus on how and what they do, and we enable that reliably and assuredly and affordably as well.
And so if you're in a position where considering satellite services, you have to be aware of the new program, Global Express, and perhaps make considerations and look at different services that are available that may not have been available 6 months ago or certainly not 12 or even 2 years ago.
Absolutely. And, you know, Global Express started as a program in 2010. And so in just under 5 years, it'll go from concept to full global deployment, highly available, wideband, global satellite communications interconnected for mobility, unprecedented, and our last satellite to complete that global constellation will launch on the 28th of August. So it's very exciting, not just for the company, but for the users who are depending upon the capability.
Great. We're kind of running out of time here. I'd like to come back and find out more about that satellite in a year and see how well it was deployed and how well it was utilized. But that's a story for down the road here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch. She's the Senior Vice President, Government Strategy and Policy, U.S. Government Business Unit at Inmarsat. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.